And welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Welcome to our Saturday afternoon get-together, 3 p.m. Pacific time, streaming live on the internet at richarddugan.com. And you can also listen to the archives as we bring you New Paradigms for a New World. I have to start out by telling you that I had the distinct pleasure of sharing this afternoon with Jacob Wong, who is the developer of the creator of the Dragon deck of cards that is used in the game Q Mahjong. There was a tournament that was held today at the Elks Lodge 613 over on Kellogg Street in Santa Barbara. And he had about 16 to 20 people who showed up, and it worked out quite well because out of those 16, he had four final four players. And interestingly enough, one of those final four players had only, from what I understand, had only learned the game today. That's how easy this game is to learn and to play. And so hopefully we'll hear something from Jacob before the show is out as to who won. Big prize was up for grabs. That was a $2,000 gift card from Best Buy. And the other second, third, and fourth prizes were $1,500 and $250 gift cards. So a fun time had by everybody. Great lunch put on by the Elks Lodge. And look forward to more things happening with Jacob and the Q Mahjong. And if you want to find out more, go to richarddugan.com, click on the Q. It's not that hard to find. It's right there on the homepage. So click on the Q, go to qmahjong.com and find out more. This program comes your way every Saturday, as we have mentioned, to bring you new paradigms for a new world. Today is the first day of spring. Now, there's been a little debate as to when the first day of spring comes along. There's a song that I love very much by one of my favorite artists, Harry Chapin, who in one of his songs says, "On March 21st, the first day of spring, blah, 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 blah." Well, it doesn't always fall on the 21st, and I'm not sure exactly what the parameters are. All I know is that when spring springs, or when spring has sprung, we all start thinking about, well, obviously warming up, because there are a lot of places in the country that are digging out of the snow. We also start thinking about spring cleaning. Now, when I set this interview up, did I have any idea that it was going to fall on the first day of spring? No, I didn't plan it that way. I told you before, I'll tell you again. I have no control over this program. It's not up to me. My guest today is the author of Mental House Cleaning, Attitude Adjustments You Can Do in the Comfort and Privacy of Your Own Mind. Tomas Lafayette Picard is my guest. Welcome to the program. You're all the way out there in Albuquerque, New Mexico, where, as you were sharing with us off air, you were basically having a few inches of snow on the ground this morning, but now in the afternoon sunlight, there's no more snow.
Sunshine, blue skies, no more snow. Thanks for having me on, Richard. It's great to be here.
Absolutely. And what I find so wonderful about your book is how anybody can do this. You know, they can certainly go to your website and check out further information. You can basically blast out of neutral mental house cleaning for the fearless as well as the faint of heart. And we're going to find out exactly what tools we need using the metaphors of a broom and a dustpan and a feather duster, or in some cases, a bulldozer and wrecking ball. What we need to do to carry on the process of doing mental house cleaning, not just on the first day of spring, but all the time, to clear out, as they say, clear out the cobwebs. And obviously, being the fact that we're now coming out of winter, I mean, a lot of people, that's kind of where they are right now, aren't they? They're kind of starting to shake off the cold, and they're trying to wake up a little bit. You know, they've been in that deep freeze, if you will, both physically and mentally.
Yes.
And they want to do more with their lives, but, you know, it's because of the fact that they haven't got the engine revved up, and they can't figure out how to do that. What are some of the tools, if you will, that we might want to consider getting our hands on, again, metaphorically speaking, to begin this process of mental house cleaning?
Well, the first tool is to have a mind. Considering that most of us have one, at least one, the big thing is awareness. Let me illustrate that. You read the book. You know I'd rather tell a story than answer a question.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a story that's actually in the book. Several years ago, I was at a hypnosis at a hypnosis seminar, and the instructor was talking about post-hypnotic suggestions. So he takes his subject and he gets him to a nice, deep level, and he says, "I'm going to count from 1 to 3. You'll open your eyes. You won't remember any of this. But when you see me put my hand in my pocket, you're going to loosen your tie. When I take my hand out of my pocket, you're going to put your tie back up. You won't remember this, yada, 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 1, 2, 3. Yeah, I wasn't really hypnotized. It's really comfortable, but I wasn't hypnotized." The instructor slips his hand in his pocket. The guy loosens his tie. So what's up with this? "Oh, well, I was feeling a little warm. No big deal." "Okay, no problem." Takes his hand out of his pocket. Up comes the tie. "Well, I thought you were warm." "Yeah, but I didn't look very professional, so okay, whatever." Puts his hand back in his pocket. Down comes the tie. He says, "Well, what's up with it?" "It's my tie. I'll do what I want with it." Then all of a sudden, he sticks his hand in and out of his pocket like 5 times as fast as he can. The guy nearly broke both hands. And the instructor says, "Now, hang on a second. Notice when I put my hand here, you do this. When I do that, you do this." The guy's looking at us sideways. We're all falling out of our chairs. And a couple of minutes later, the instructor casually slips his hand in his pocket. The guy jumps up and stands on his chair and says, "Oh, no, you're not catching me on that one again." The instructor smiled and looked at us and said, "That's what I'm talking about. When you become aware of the programming, you can begin to take control of the programming."
Hmm.
And that's really the key to mental house cleaning is, first of all, check your attitudes, your attitude about yourself, your attitude about other people, other races, religions, whatever. And ask yourself, as Dr. Phil might say, "How's that working for you, sport?"
Well, now, you have a rather diverse background, and I find it fascinating that here we are talking about mental house cleaning, and nowhere in here were you ever, working for the local refuse pickup service or as a janitor in a hospital. You were a chiropractor, credentialed in acupressure, Ayurvedic clinical hypnosis, network, spinal analysis, Reiki, yoga, meditation, and the Silva method. So what was it that you saw? What was the catalyst that said to you, the event, if you will, if there was such a thing, that said to you, "You know what? I've got to get people to understand that they're running the neutral, spinning their wheels, or not even that. The engine isn't even engaged. They're just revving the engine."
Just revving the engine, yeah.
And they're not going anywhere. And yet they have all of these wonderful dreams of going somewhere. And then they read all of these other books by all of these other people who have all of these other ideas and concepts and say, "Do this and think that and believe this and go here and go there." And yet they're still running in neutral.
As it says right on page one of my book, the grandpappy of all positive thinking books, Think and Grow Rich, has sold over 30 million copies. Millions and millions of people sit down and think, and the publishers grow rich.
Mm. Yeah.
And let me illustrate this mental health cleaning thing with another story, and then I want to get back to answer the question that you asked.
Okay.
Several years ago, my in-laws gave me a guitar for Christmas. Actually, they gave me money to buy a guitar, and I went out and bought the cheapest guitar I could find. Took it home, started playing on it, and a couple of days I couldn't play it anymore because the neck warped all around so that no matter where I put my fingers on the fretboard, the guitar played the same note. And it wasn't a bad note. In fact, I had a couple of votes to hang on to the guitar. It was better than some of those I'd been trying to play. But it wasn't the note I wanted to play. It wasn't the note I chose to play.
Mm-hmm.
It was the note that the guitar played for me.
Mm-hmm.
And our fretboards do much the same thing. We get all of these attitudes and ideas and notions and stuff stuck in our heads, and we don't get to play the notes that we want. We think we're positive. We think positive, but the fretboard dictates the notes, and we play the same note over and over and over and make excuses for why it doesn't work. When we know it should work, we know this stuff works, but it doesn't work for us, so those people in the books, they must be special or magic or something.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for several years, this is to answer your question, for several years I've traveled around the country and to several other countries doing talks and seminars and classes on personal development, self-improvement, positive thinking, all of that kind of stuff. And then a few years, and you know, after I would finish speaking, very often somebody would come up to me and say, well, you know, that's kind of cool. You ought to write a book. So, you know, I began taking some notes and, you know, filed them away, got busy doing other stuff. And then a few years ago, I suffered a career-ending injury. And in order to get through it, I had to pull out all of the tools that I had accumulated over the years and work through this process to get back to health. Now, I don't mean to imply by any stretch of the imagination that thinking positive got me well, but by maintaining a positive attitude, by maintaining positive expectancy, I was able to move forward, look for, and recognize results that got me back well. So the book really is pretty much a journal of my journey through the process of mental house cleaning back to health.
Hmm. My guest is, now, do I refer to you as doctor or just Tomas Picard?
Well, the only people I ever asked to call me doctor were people who were trying to sell me something. And, you know, since I'm trying to sell you something, I'll go with Tomas.
Okay. Tomas Picard is my guest. Mental house cleaning is the subject on the table for today. And you're listening to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We'll be right back.
You have a message that others can benefit from. A meditation to share. A talk to give that you want heard by more than just those present. A workshop, seminar, presentation with speakers whose information, insight, and inspiration can help others to break through to their highest potential and purpose. Making a quality recording is the first step to making it available, and fast forward is the right direction. They'll bring the recording studio to you. Your message is important. It needs to be recorded by professionals who share your passion and want to provide quality recording to those who want and need to hear it. Call 805-708-9804 to take that first step. 805-708-9804. Call Fast Forward for all your recording needs on location and in studio. 805-708-9804.
Have you lost direction in life? Do you constantly worry or give to others but deny your own heart? Hi, I'm Candy Hoff, healing practitioner and angel intuitive counselor. I'll inspire and help you find your inner strength to regain clarity and balance in your life. Book your transformational session in downtown Santa Barbara by phoning 831-277-3716 or visit my website, angelhealinghouse.com.
CNN Radio.
CNN Radio's Pat Neal reports.
CNN Radio's Skip Losher has more from Washington.
CNN Radio's John Bisney has the latest from Capitol
Hill. Kelly Arena has details from Washington.
CNN Radio's Dick Giuliano in Washington.
CNN Radio's Andrea Koppel reporting live from Pyongyang, North
CNN
Korea.
CNN Radio's John Bisney reports.
CNN Radio's Dick Giuliano has the story from Washington.
CNN Radio's Holly Furfer has more from Atlanta.
CNN Radio's Candy Crawley reports.
CNN Radio's Gary Baumgarten was there.
CNN Radio's Dick Giuliano has the story from Washington.
This is CNN.
Keeping all that fear inside. I understand how trouble haunts you.
It haunts me too.
Yes, and I do know how you feel. Oh, come on, walk with me. Talk with me. Tell me your story.
And this is Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, New Paradigms for a New World. And we're here every Saturday, 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time, streaming live on the internet at richarddugan.com as we broadcast on the Central Coast every Saturday afternoon. Archives at richarddugan.com if you want to hear a previous program. You want to hear this program again once we're done with it. And we got to finish before you can go and listen to it. You do understand that. Although I will say, Tomas, that I do have some friends who deal in the whole issue of time and dimensions and so forth, and they would disagree with me saying, no. The interview's already done. If you just know which dimension to go to, you can listen to it now, even though we're still here carrying it on. So, but that's another subject for another time. The book is Mental House Cleaning, Attitude Adjustments You Can Do. I actually love this. And when I used this line in the promo, somebody said, you know, I really like the way you did that. It was cool. Attitude Adjustments You Can Do in the Comfort and Privacy of Your Own Mind. Once again, you do have to have a mind to carry out this procedure of mental house cleaning. And those who are listening do. It's just that some of our minds are more cluttered than others. Now, you have a rather wide and varied knowledge base as far as health and wellness and working with people, and certainly, I'm sure, very well read, especially the list of people that you list in your book. And I'm wondering if you have found that key to unlocking the storehouse, if you will, the abundance, whether it be the cash, you know, hundreds of thousands mm-hmm. of millions of dollars, or what I have begun to understand more and more from people that I've talked with on this program, it's not so much the money that individuals really want. It's more to be freed from the stress and the struggle for it. It's like if they didn't feel that, it would almost not matter how much they had, because they would be happy. They would be sort of at peace.
Yeah. I was at a seminar some years ago. I spend a lot of time in seminars, and I start a lot of sentences with, I was at a seminar some years ago. And the guy was talking about just this thing, and he took out a stack of $100 bills, and he gave every one of us a $100 bill, and he says, okay, now eat it. And, you know, we're like, are you crazy? He said, no, I'm serious. Put it in your mouth right now and chew it up. And we did, and it tasted awful. He said, money isn't what you want, is it?
Well, you know, it's real interesting, because we seem to get caught up in some other message that's coming in from somewhere else, that it is money. Yeah. It is the almighty dollar that we're striving for.
But it isn't. It's the stuff that money can do for us. It's the freedom. It's the things that money can free us up to be able to think that we're freer and go ahead and do the things that we wanted to do anyway.
Mm. So now, how long have you... As I was sharing with you off break, my search, if you will, began at the age of 17. Started out with a particular book, and it's just kind of has propelled me forward to where I am today, where I'm almost 50, and which is very, very hard to believe, because I still feel pretty darn close to 17.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I wake up in the morning, I'm 16 years old, my feet hit the floor, and I'm not.
Yeah, yeah. And I think I may start doing that. I may just say, no, I'm 17. You know, no, I don't care what you see. I'm telling you. I'm 17, but when did your search begin? When did you begin to ponder these kinds of things? And it had to have been some time ago, simply because of the array of areas that you've gone into. I mean, Reiki is not the norm direction for somebody to go when you talk about healing, any more than yoga and meditation and acupuncture and so forth.
That's true, but if you look at the word healing, it comes from the same root as the word holy and wholeness mm-hmm. and holistic. So it really is all about creating a synergy, creating a wholeness within the person, and not so much about chasing symptoms. You know, as I would describe frequently to a patient, you know, if you go out to dinner tonight and you know eat a nice dinner, but you get a little salmonella or something in it, and you go home and throw up, are you sick or are you well?
Hmm. Interesting.
Well, you know, you look like you're sick, you certainly feel like you're sick, but that's a healthy body doing what it needs to do to get rid of that.
Yeah, it's
a sick body would say, I don't know, maybe we'll hang on to this, it could be important.
This is true. Well,
he ate it for some reason.
But where did this begin for you?
I do not remember a time when I wasn't on what, for lack of a better phrase, would be a search for God. As my earliest thoughts were about things beyond just, you know, getting day to day. And I guess I really got serious about it about the same time you did. In high school, I began to question, like most of us do at that age, I began to question some of the things that I'd been told and that I took for granted, and began to find other answers. And through that process over the last, years, I've come up with answers that work for me.
Now, that's an interesting turn of a phrase, answers that work for me. So when you asked the questions, were you consulting more text, or did you sometimes seek out individuals to try to get those answers from verbally, that kind of exchange?
Both. Any time that I could actually have a conversation with another person so that there was an exchange, an interchange of thought, that always seemed to work better than just reading somebody's words.
Which is part of what we like to do here. I mean, certainly people can pick up a copy of your book, which, by the way, is Mental House Cleaning. They can pick it up at Amazon.com. They can pick it up at your website, and we're linked to your website as well. And they can read the words that you've put down, but it's getting to know you, who you are, why you are where you are these days, as opposed to somewhere else. I mean, you know, you can be doing a lot of different things and going in a lot of different directions, and yet you've chosen this particular path, if you will. And here we are chatting about it. And I'm just curious as to if you've always been this curious. So then when you started asking these questions, it had to have just frustrated the bejeepers out of a lot of folks initially.
Oh, yes, because, you know, some people you're just not supposed to question. You're supposed to just take what they tell you.
Mm-hmm.
And they not only take it personally, they question your sanity and they threaten your hereafter if you ask the wrong questions or too many of the right ones.
I've been told on more than one occasion that I was going to hell.
Well, everybody I know is going to be there.
Well, we'll have plenty of time to shake hands going around.
Yeah, only my mother and that other guy are going to be in the other place.
So, pardon me. So how are the relations with family and friends these days? Do you no longer have the same friends you had back then because they just couldn't deal with your heresy?
Pretty much, and that's something that I do talk about in the book, is when we begin to change, when we begin to move to become the people that we've always wanted to be, it forces our friends to own up to the fact that they can too, and they either have to change and grow with us, or they fade away, because far too often, friendship is just an excuse for shared misery. Mm. We all get together and we complain about the man, or we complain about, you know, why it doesn't work for us instead of getting out there and making it work.
So would you say that maybe the old adage that you can't change someone else isn't entirely true?
No, it's not entirely true, because people tend to live up to or down to our expectations of them. And again, that's something that I talk about in the book, is we know that if teachers are told that, you know, certain students in their class are geniuses, you got to be careful with these kids, they will treat the children like geniuses and the kids will respond with genius work, because they just tend to respond to how they're treated. Now, whether we actually change the people around us, whether we actually change the world around us, I don't know. But a friend has a plaque over his desk that I've got to get a copy of for my desk. It says, "Things work out best for those who make the best of the way things work out."
Almost sounds a like the modified serenity prayer.
Pretty much, yeah.
But it is true.
It is.
I,
the world is what it is, and our response to it determines our reality.
Absolutely. And we're beginning to see the ramifications of that as we go through our individual lives, as well as collectively as communities and cities and states and countries, and even globally, we're beginning to see that as well. And I'm just curious, have you observed and been able to sort of monitor how our society, our civilization, has shifted and changed or not over the years that you've been asking these questions and pondering these great things?
Yes, more and more people are asking these questions, and they're searching for answers. You know, sometimes I think they're searching in some pretty odd places, but at least they're searching for them. And if they're looking, sooner or later they're going to turn in the right direction and find the answers.
Yeah.
At least, like I said, answers that work for them. But yes, more and more people are searching, asking those questions, and I think the phrase is, we're all becoming light workers.
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair assessment. I like what I believe I'm recalling this correctly. Teresa of Avila once said that God lives amongst the pots and the pans.
Yeah.
And so people may be searching in a lot of weird places, but like you said, at least they're searching, at least they're asking. And what was it you said at the beginning of the program, that the first step to mental house cleaning is acknowledging you need to clean the mental house?
Yeah, acknowledging that there's some dust bunnies hanging around in there.
Yeah. So when we decide that we want to begin this process, we've burned off of enough fuel, running the engine in neutral, and just spinning our, you know, just going nowhere and doing the same thing over and over and again. As they say, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. Okay, we want a different result. So what's my second step? I've acknowledged I need to clean house mentally. Now what?
Okay, when I'm writing something on my computer and I don't like what it says, I don't just start writing something else, right? Because
mm-hmm.
it doesn't make any sense at all. You have to go back, highlight what you don't like, and hit the delete button, and then write what you do want.
Mm. Okay.
And that's kind of the thing. You know, we identify these attitudes, we figure out what they are, and then we highlight and delete. We find the delete button, and that delete button is pretty much inside us. And on my website, there's a 10 or 12 minute downloadable free meditation to help people get into that state of consciousness, that inner conscious mind, that quiet place inside us where those attitudes hang out, and we can begin to rinse them and get them gone so that we can put new ones in.
Is it your belief that we can actually delete to where it is actually gone, or is it always going to be somewhere still resident, somewhere way back in the recesses?
Well, some, you know, great scientist or Shakespeare or somebody said that nothing is ever forgotten. It's just, you know, misplaced in there. And I got a lot of places to misplace things. But it's kind of like a track in the woods. You know, if you keep walking the same path, it gets cleared of vegetation, and you can stay on that path pretty easily. If you want to do a new path, you have to clear out the underbrush and all of that and make that new path and let the old path grow up.
Hmm.
And that's kind of the idea. The old path is still there. It's just easier to go the new path because we put more and more energy and more time and more desire into it. And desire and expectancy are major keys to reprogramming ourselves.
If you've just joined us, my guest is Tomas Lafayette Picard, the author of Mental House Cleaning: Attitude Adjustments You Can Do in the Comfort and Privacy of Your Own Mind, available at Amazon.com as well as his website. And we are linked to Tomas's website, and you can get there through the, as of this afternoon, you'll be able to get there through the radio show's page. And also listen to this interview once again, or as many times as you like, and we encourage you to do so. And again, we do come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time, and we do stream live on the internet at richarddugan.com. Tomas, I find it extraordinary when I come across someone such as yourself who would you consider yourself, and again, I only have the information that is available on your website and in your book to go by, but would you consider yourself a learned man of more spiritual leanings or metaphysical leanings than, say, a nuts and bolts physician or practitioner of the medical or healing arts?
Gee, I don't know that that's an either-or situation.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, I consider myself to be a deeply spiritual, metaphysical student, and I have done an awful lot of hands-on work with healing the sick, raising the dead, you know, all of the usual Monday through Friday stuff.
Well, we were told that we would be doing those kinds of things, and even more so by someone who is doing those kinds of things, and so I can't see where there's a problem there. What is your particular, when you came into this world, you know, your parents raised you in a particular practice, if you will, or religion, or did they? What was that?
Yes, I was raised in a very fundamentalist Christian home. My father was a soldier. He did his 20 years. And my mother's life ambition was to be a preacher's wife. So when my father retired from the service, he became a preacher. So I got to be an army brat and preacher's kid, which is a pretty nasty combination, let me tell you. And kind of going back to what you were talking about earlier, when my older brother was listed missing in action in Vietnam, he was listed MIA for 10 years, and then they declared him killed in action, and they just found his remains a few years ago and buried him in Arlington. And when my older brother was listed MIA, my father preached his final sermon. He stood up, you know, he got up, and instead of standing behind the pulpit like a good preacher would, he just stood to the side and put his arm on the pulpit and just stood there and looked out for like 30 seconds. And you know how long 30 seconds is. I mean, you're on the radio. 30 seconds of dead air is a long time.
It is.
And he just stood there, and people began to, you know, kind of shift around. And he said, finally, why are y'all here? And, of course, nobody said anything because in that church, nobody said anything except the preacher, except when they were singing. And he said, no, I'm serious. Somebody answer me. Why are you here? And one of the deacons stood up and said, we're here to see Jesus. And my dad says, and what makes you think Jesus is here? I mean, come on. If Jesus were in town today, would he be here? Or would he be over on the other side of the tracks where people need him? You want to see Jesus? Get your ass over there where Jesus is. And he sat down.
Wow.
They fired him about 30 minutes later. So.
Okay.
Yeah,
that
didn't work out too good.
Did he ever give any kind of an explanation as to where that came from?
No. He just let them hang on it.
Hmm.
He figured it was their problem, not his.
Well, it certainly is a good question for all of us to ask as far as, you know, why are we here in a given spot? What are we waiting for or what are we looking for? I remember early in my broadcast career working for the Christian station, I actually shared the fact that I was on my search, to which someone said, well, if you fail, yeah, you can kind of see this one coming. And I was told basically, well, if your search stops when you found Jesus, and my first thought was, no, it kind of begins right there.
Yeah.
Because he's the one that made me curious in the first place. And it is fascinating to see all of the people that we have come across. I'm curious as to, are you still, I'm not sure if this is the proper phrase or not, practicing medicine or the healing arts?
No, I am. Like I said, I suffered an injury 10 years ago or so and had to quit. It was a bizarre closed head injury that left me with vertigo and tinnitus and, you know, panic attacks, and the focus that it required to treat a patient would cause me to fall on the floor, writhe around, and throw up. which is not really good for doctor-patient relationships, so I had to give it up.
Not real good bedside manner. So how many how many people had you seen in your practice?
You know, I did a calculation on that just the other night when I was, you know, instead of counting sheep, and it was something over 140,000 adjustments over the last 30 years.
Wow. And obviously this was, that was the number of adjustments. Would that not necessarily be the number of patients per se?
No, that was probably, geez, I don't know, 10,000 patients.
And that's a lot of people to have had an impact on. I mean, literally, directly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like to think that, you know, somewhere in that process, I gave somebody enough insight that I earned my spot on the planet.
Mm. Well, I know that when we delved into this particular program, Tell Me Your Stories with New Paradigms for New World, and trying to give people different ideas, basically we're going around the circle and we're looking at a particular point on that circle. Today it happens to be you, Tomas, and your perspective of life and the hereafter and spiritual things, metaphysical aspects of what we're doing here and what we're going to do next. In terms of what happened to you that 10 years ago, what kind of perspective did you put that in to allow yourself to again to propel yourself forward? I mean, you did talk about you know the positive thought and just the expectation of something better each day, maybe each moment. But was there anything of a longer term concept or aphorism or that's not the word I want, affirmation, that's the word I want, that kept propelling you forward?
Yes, and I it's not a simple, you know, one-line thing, but it was essential to my recovery that I know all the way to my bones that this was a problem, not a judgment. I wasn't being punished for some misdeed in this or any other life. If there wasn't a lesson that I hadn't learned that I needed to pay attention to, it was just something that happened and had to be dealt with. And while there may or may not be a fix for all of the symptoms, there's always the possibility of healing, which, like I said a while ago, is more about wholeness and holistic and holy.
Now, are you now with the release of this book? Are you making are you on book tours aside from phone interviews? Are you getting out and about doing book signings, things of this nature, even giving talks at this particular point?
I have, yes, and I'm getting a lot of requests to put together workshops, one and a half day workshops, and we are in process of putting that together, and we'll be taking that on the road probably by late spring.
Okay.
And, you know, when that happens, that'll all be on my website, mentalhousecleaning.com.
Mentalhousecleaning.com, same as the book, without the .com.
Funny how that works, without the .com.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, are you in process at all? I mean, obviously you've just brought this book out and brought it to life and are telling people about it and the concepts therein. But is there anything else in the works that you want to share with the listeners?
Well, my plans include lying on the beach in southern Italy with a bottle of Chianti by my side. But, you know, I get the look whenever I say that. So other than the workshops, no, I don't have any plans along this vein. You know, it's, as I was saying a while ago, I don't remember a time when I wasn't on a search for God. At the same time, I don't remember a time in my life when I didn't want to be a writer.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got a lot of writing projects underway, but none of them in this particular vein.
Do you ever receive inspiration? I almost want to say, do you ever have conversations with God?
Every day, every morning, yes. It's part of my daily routine.
And how do those usually go?
Well, he usually says, "Yo, Tomas." it's about being quiet and, you know, listening to the old phrase, that small, still voice within.
Mm-hmm.
It's about figuring out which way the flow is going and trying to surf on the flow instead of swimming against the current.
Mm-hmm.
And it's there are some literal conversations where, you know, I express my gratitude for all of the great stuff that I do have in my life and ask for direction. But most of it is just about paying attention and, as Jon Kabat-Zinn would say, being in the moment, being present.
Mm. I know that's something that it's not real big right now. That's something that's always been said time immemorial, that it is this moment right now that is the most important. You can't do anything about the past, and you cannot do anything about the future. You don't live there. Now, your mind might go there, but you physically don't live there.
Yeah, and, you know, the old saying is that the now moment is a gift. That's why they call it the present.
You know what? I had never thought of it that way until now. I like that.
You can have that one.
I appreciate that. Now, as your life has unfolded up to this point, certainly your search, was that what really sent you in the direction that you really wanted to go? Or did you have aspirations to be other than? I mean, did you architect or firefighter or, you know, again, I could run down a list of things. Or was that just the natural progression for you as far as the search that you had been on, again, from the very beginning?
It was pretty much a natural progression. It was just a matter of paying attention and, like I said, seeing which way the energy goes and going with it. You know, I was traveling around the country. I was in Kansas City, Missouri, and I was doing a series of talks on this whole mental health cleaning notion. And there was a gentleman who was sitting in the front row, and he was sitting next to this absolutely stunning young girl. And, you know, she caught my attention.
Mm-hmm.
And then he caught my attention because he was taking notes on what I was saying in Chinese.
Oh.
I said, I need to talk to this guy. Turns out he was a chiropractor and an acupuncturist. And I said, you're a chiropractor. How do you get to be a chiropractor? And he drove me down the street, introduced me to the president of the college. I wrote him a check and started school.
Mm.
And, you know, everything just seemed to happen because I was paying attention and let it take me where it wanted. You know, I God set the sails and make the wind go, and I just ride on the boat.
Well, that's kind of what I say about this program. I'm just along for the ride. I don't know where it's going. I have no clue. I mean, you know, I am thankful that no program that I have ever done has ever crashed and burned. That obviously is not the intent, but yeah, you just get on and you get excited about whatever comes along because you've never been there before.
And intention really is a major, major player there. I mean, you may not know how it's going to go, but your intention is to have a good show that explores these topics and all of that. And your intention keeps everything going that direction.
You know, I started out the program talking about my friend Jacob Wong and his card game and so forth, and I shared this with you off air about how it can actually help your mental capacity. It helps your brain power, if you will, because you have to use parts of your brain that you might not have otherwise used for problem solving. You have to do some calculations in your head, this kinds of things. Nothing major. And I'm
not like card counting in Vegas.
Oh no, not by any stretch of the imagination. But at the same time, you develop these aspects of your brain. You know, we don't think about that. We don't think about exercising the brain. But boy, we'll go out and run 20 miles to exercise the body and build up those muscles. And he was telling me that again, I don't know what the actual stats are, but, you know, the man is from China and tells me that in China, they have minimal numbers of Alzheimer's or senile dementia in China because most of the people play these games that require mental agility.
Yeah, or they're still working at jobs that require some mental agility. You know, when our mental exercise consists of choosing which channel to watch, you know, I don't think that really qualifies.
No, I don't think so. Not at all. Tomas Lafayette Picard is my guest. Mental house cleaning is the topic, and we're going to take a short break. We're going to come back and talk about more as we come close to the end of the program. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We'll be right back.
Remember the stories your family used to tell?
July, I got married 1913 when my father and my uncle came from Italy.
When was the last time you listened to the songs of your youth?
Well, close. Very swinging sound here in the Bilhart Underground. That's Wild Things.
Want to hear those voices and music again? Fast Forward can help. Fast Forward Audio Communications can transfer your records and tapes to CD so you can hear them again for the first time.
Okay, stand by. I may want to get you a man right now until they go, and I'll go. Stand by.
You're listening to a live transmission of the voice of astronaut Walter Chirac.
Those memories are priceless and are great to hand down to the next generation. Keep those memories alive. Call 805-708-9804.
That's the first thing that I ever heard.
Fast Forward. It's the right direction for preserving your family memories. Just call 805-708-9804.
Are you sad or angry about past events in your life? Would you like more joy, love, and peace? Hi, I'm Candy Hoff, healing practitioner and angel intuitive counselor. I'll inspire and help you find your inner strength to regain clarity and balance in your life. Book your transformational session in downtown Santa Barbara by phoning 831-277-3716 or visit my website, angelhealinghouse.com.
You can do a lot in an hour. You can jog 5 miles, mow a lawn. It's enough time to change your oil or donate the blood someone will need to survive. An hour can be a powerful thing. So just imagine what CSX employees get done when they volunteer 350,000 hours a year to hundreds of causes. We don't just wait for change, we help drive it. To learn more, go to csx.com. CSX, how tomorrow moves.
Tell me your story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us on the program today. And every Saturday, we also archive the programs at richarddugan.com. Just go to the radio shows page. The link is right there on the left-hand side, along with all the others. You can check out our schedule of guests that we have upcoming, as well as look at all of the programs that we've done since September of 2007, if you can believe that. We'll be celebrating 3 years of doing this show. That's only one-tenth of the number of years I've been actually interviewing folks, and it's extraordinary. And I actually will take that concept you used of being in the present, and it is a present, and it is a gift. That's the way I look at the guests. It's like Christmas morning, and I get to open up this package, and I get to experience something I've never experienced before, and I might even take bits and pieces from what that person has to share and maybe incorporate those things into my own life. And that's kind of what we do, is we glean from one another, sometimes whether we're even aware of it, and it changes our lives. And as I was saying earlier about the rule about, you know, you can't change someone else, and actually I tell people, actually you can. Change yourself, and you will change the people around you, whether they like it or not. Because they're either going to change their association with you, or they're going to keep their association with you and make the necessary adjustments to continue on in the relationship that grows and fosters.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's a that idea of we take something from every encounter. There's a chapter in my book called Lies My Mother Sold Me. And, you know, I pick on my poor mom a lot in this book, but she's forgiven me, mostly. And it has to do with those things that we pick up from other people that we don't pick up deliberately, consciously. It's just the authority figures, whether that's mom and dad or grandparents or the television or teacher or the kid down the block, people tell us stuff and we accept it as true without ever examining it, without ever finding out, like I said earlier, how's that working for you, sport?
Exactly. Well, what I can share with our listeners is that some of the topics in this book called Mental House Cleaning, Positive Thinking Doesn't Work. I'll put an asterisk. You'll have to read that chapter. It's All in How You Look at It. How Do I Love Me? I'm okay and you're okay, but lock the door anyway.
Yeah.
And then Please Don't Scare the Daisies. I like that. And then, of course, as you mentioned, Lies My Mother Sold Me, Watering the Roots, There Must Be a Trick, The Missing Ingredient, and then the final chapter is Positive Thinking Works. So, the book, again, Mental House Cleaning, Tomas Lafayette Picard, my guest, and my final question for you on this program today, Tomas. Again, we could repeat the list of wonderful things, the healing that you have brought to hundreds of hundreds and thousands of people over the years that you have been doing that, and also the inspiration that you bring to them. Why this? Why now?
If, like we said, the first chapter of the book is called Positive Thinking Doesn't Work. And because if it did work, first of all, there'd be a lot fewer books about it, and we would have a lot less to talk about today. But it does work, but it only works if you've done the mental house cleaning, if you've gotten those dust bunnies out of the way so that positive thinking has a chance to settle in and grow and become a good positive attitude. And it's really important, as things speed up more and more, as we see more and more opportunity for the dark side to gain the upper hand, it becomes really imperative that we take charge of who we are. And we take charge of our own minds, and we take charge of our own destinies, and begin to move ourselves and move our world in a more positive, creative, problem-solving direction.
And from your perspective in the last 30 seconds, how do you see the future for us in our society?
The future's so bright, we've got to wear shades, to coin a phrase.
I like it.
The future is what we choose to make of it. And the more of us who actually choose to make a future instead of letting it happen, the greater that future is going to be.
Tomas Picard, thank you so much for joining us on the program today.
Thank you, Richard. It's been a great time.
Stay with us. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story. Mental House Cleaning is the title of the book. Tomas Picard is my guest, and I thank you so much for joining us. Send me an email, richard@richarddugan.com. Also go to mentalhousecleaning.com. Check out the book. Until next Saturday at this same time, I'm Richard Dugan. Love to Lal.